Hello and welcome to David's Book Talk, and we have a huge author today. His name is Vince Flynn. He's a New York Times bestselling, number one bestselling author, and he's got a new book out called The Last Man. It is Mitch Rapp number 14, is that correct, 14?
Oh, it's my 14th novel, but it's Rapp's 13th. He didn't appear in my first book, Term Limits.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I got misinformation somewhere. I read it was the 14th.
Oh, I can't trust everything you read.
You know, Vince, you really write really interesting books. You know that?
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
I mean, there's so many political thrillers out there. There's so many writers writing, and you're quite a standout. I mean, just reading this book, it's so interesting. There are just parts of this book you just delve into, and you can think to yourself, I really like this book.
Well, thank you. You know, when I sat down to write this one, So the previous two books, American Assassin and Kill Shot, were prequels about Rapp in his mid-20s, circa the mid-90s here in America. And it was great. I loved doing it. It was very refreshing. But by the time I'd written those two, I wanted to get back to the here and now because I'm so fascinated by what's going on over in the Middle East and Afghanistan.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the things I'm most fascinated about is as we begin to unwind, you know, the longest war this country's ever seen, it never goes smoothly. You know, militarily, they always say it's one of the most difficult operations to pull off is a rear guard retreat. And that's what we're about to try to do. We're about to try to draw down our troop strengths and get everybody out of there without all hell breaking loose in the meantime. And Afghanistan is such an interesting part of the world because there has been billions and billions and billions of U.S. dollars pumped in there, much of it going to bribery and corruption, and I think it's next to impossible to have as many United States personnel over there as we've had and them remain, you know, untainted by what has happened. I've posited a bunch of little interesting things early in the book. This Joe Rickman character, has he been kidnapped? Was he willingly kidnapped? Where is this going to go? How is the State Department going to handle this? How is the CIA going to handle it? What role, are the Joint Special Operations Command going to play? And I think it's really interesting theater.
It is. It's just fascinating. And we never really know what's happening in your books right away. We think we do. And then you always throw these surprises in during the book. And I love that. I love the fact that, because it's so easy for a book to become boring if things aren't happening or if you know what's going to happen or you can see what's going to happen 50 pages ahead of where you are.
Well, so David, you know what my trick is? I used to sit down and I'd outline the whole book. I did it for probably the first four books I wrote. And what I found out is one third in, two thirds, half, whatever, I always ended up coming up with better ideas. And I'd take that outline and I'd set it aside. So what I do now is I outline the first third, maybe the first quarter of the first third. I populate Rapp's world with a certain number of characters. I always have primary and secondary villains, and I know that at the end, Rapp, for instance, he's got to kill one, two, three, four, five, maybe six of those people. Mm-hmm. They have to have their showdown at the end. So what I do from the beginning to the end, I let it grow more organically now. Some characters take on a bigger role as I get into the story. Other characters bore me and they slip to the wayside. And I kind of jokingly say that if I don't know what's going to happen next, I don't know how the reader's going to figure out what's going to happen next. So I've found this formula to work for me.
Well,
to keep it fresh.
What I really like about The Last Man, the new one, and I should mention to people it'll be available on November 13th, just so everybody knows when it's going to be in all the bookstores on November 13th. But what I really like about this one is the characters are just getting more and more interesting as the series goes along. I mean, I don't remember Irene Kennedy being this interesting. She's just fascinating in this book. I mean, every facet of her, I feel like I'm in her mind in this book, and I like that. I really like that.
I'm very glad to hear you say that because I worked a little harder this time on her.
She doesn't forgive very easy, that woman.
No, no. You know, she goes through you know, I don't want to give anything away, but there's a moment in the story where she is really beating herself up. And she has allowed herself to become, she's allowed herself to be human. And she gets burned. And then she's really pissed.
When you think about a job like that, a job that has so much responsibility, I mean, there's such a heaviness on her, you know, to make sure her team stays alive. And I mean, that's, all that weight is on her. When you think about that, that's a huge weight to put on anybody.
Well, and then when you think, like, in, you know, we can give away how this book opens, you know, basically the guy who has been handling all the money for the last, you know, 8 years over in Afghanistan, you know, over $1 billion in cash payments has gone missing, and four of his bodyguards are dead, and nobody knows where he is. And it's the CIA's worst nightmare because this guy is a walking gray supercomputer. He is a bona fide genius who knows everything there is to know.
A 205 IQ?
Yeah, everything there is to know about what the CIA has been doing in that part of the world and beyond for a long time. And if the wrong people get their hands on this guy and they interrogate him properly, you know, it could literally, you know, it could be the end of the CIA, one person going down like that. So the pressure to find him, the guilt over losing him, I mean, it makes for a page-turner because stuff has to happen and it has to happen. They need results, and they need results quick.
But it's not easy to write a page-turner. I mean, I've read a lot of books that are just boring, just plain boring, and I couldn't get through the first 50 pages. But your books are always interesting, and I really like that. And I know you work hard on them. But you have to. I mean, there's so much in this book that you couldn't possibly not work hard on it.
Well, you know, David, I don't know how to explain it to you, but I won't. When I write, I have a sense, call it a golfer in their golf swing, I don't know, a musician who can recognize a bad note. I can tell as I'm writing if it's good or not. And if it isn't, it's gone.
And you start over again?
I will. That's what I said. You know, I said some characters become more interesting than others and they take on a bigger role. But there are a lot of times where until I get in the groove, I'm throwing away a lot of pages. Because the stuff I'm writing isn't up to the level that I need it to be. And I can tell that. Especially when I come in the next morning and sit down and reread what I wrote the day before.
Right.
I either read it, I mean, there's days where I read stuff and I'll be like, this is really good. You know, this is some of the best stuff I've ever written. And I'm like a kid, I'm so excited. And then there's other days where I read it and I'm like, you idiot, this is horrible.
Yeah.
How did you waste 4 hours yesterday writing this? Because it sucks. And I delete.
Wow.
I think some writers hang on to that stuff. They have a hard time getting rid of work. And my feeling is, no, you got to dump it.
Well, there's a lot of quantity out there. I mean, they want, when a name becomes famous, like your name has, you know, they want as much stuff as they can out with your name on it because it sells. Your name sells.
And to get inside the mind of the writer, the other thing is, you know, we've got a contract that says 110,000 words, 120,000 words. And there's a lot of pressure to hit that word count by a certain day.
You have a word count in your contract? Wow.
Yeah, I do. You know, I always have.
You always want that, or was that just something they insisted on?
It's something they insisted on. I think it's a fairly standard publishing agreement. And there's I've never been under that 100. It used to be 120, and I noticed on my new contract it's 110,000 words. I have never been under. I've always been over the word count.
Now, have you ever written a book and not wanted to finish it because you were having so much fun writing it?
Oh, well, I would say Consent to Kill, I think, is my longest book next to Term Limits. And there was so much to do in that book. You know, I hit my 120,000 word count, and I blew right through it and went up to 160,000 word, because the story was so good, and there was so much left to be said that I just kept going.
Wow. And your fans don't care. Your fans love it. I mean,
correct. But I'll tell you this, David, early on in a writer's career, the publishers, they know that to be very careful. If a book is too long, there's a lot of readers that won't, they just don't want to tackle it. So So until you create a fan base, you got to be very careful about how long your books are.
Yeah, but I had a
Grisham.
Right.
Grisham's always had, and you know, a lot of this depends on how you typeset it.
Right.
But Grisham's books tend to always be in that 325, 350 range.
Right. He was just saying that this morning. I think his new book's 340. So you're correct. But I mean, but on the other side of that, I had a customer come to the store today and say, "I want a real thick book." So some people like really thick books too.
Oh, I agree. You know, I was never afraid to tackle Clancy. I always loved his stuff, and then later in his career, I felt like he wasn't being edited, and then I found out later that he wasn't being edited because he wouldn't allow anybody to edit him, and his books just simply got too long. You know, but his first three books, I think, stand up against any other author out there in the thriller genre.
Right.
The Hunt for Red October, Red Storm Rising, and Patriot Games, I thought were just...
Was he some kind of an influence on you?
Yeah, you know, what happened was I saw his books getting more and more technical, and I thought, you know, I'd like to write something that's more like a cross between... take the good parts of Clancy, but, you know, instead of using six pages to describe something, just do it in a paragraph. And then, you know, have that smooth dialogue of Grisham and the intricate plots of Ludlum. I mean, those were three of my favorite writers, and so I wanted to kind of drive my car right down the middle of that deal. And I think it worked, fortunately.
I guess I have to ask you this, and I know you're expecting it, but how are you physically today?
Still good.
Still good?
Still good. My numbers are still good. My scans are good.
Are you in remission?
You know, you could say I'm in remission, but
okay.
I'm my kind of cancer, just because you're in remission doesn't mean you're in the clear.
Well, we're all thinking about you, and people come in the store, and I tell them what you're going through, and they're all very concerned, so it's nice to, they'll be nice to hear that you're okay.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm feeling good. The fight's far from over, but I'm happy to be alive and feeling good.
It must be good to know that so many people care about you, too. I mean, that's got to be a good feeling, too.
David, it's such a benefit to me. I get letters from all over the country from people telling me that they're praying for me, and it's a huge source of comfort to my family and me. Huge.
You go through something like that, and then right away when you realize people. When I had a heart attack 2 years ago, and I still remember the people that came to see me in the hospital. I mean, you never forget that.
So I got to ask you, how are things at Chester County Books? I've been out there in a few years.
Not too good right now. We're
I'm sorry to hear
maybe
that.
Moving, maybe closing. We don't know yet what's going to happen. But if we keep selling your books, we'll stay open because people love your stuff. And we have people come in the store and they say, "When's the next Vitzman coming out?" You know, they can't wait for your next book. I mean, and the thing is, they'll get the book and have it read in 2 weeks, and then they're like, "What's the next one?" You know, bring me the next one. You know, not realizing it takes you a year to do another one. You know, and readers can't get enough of an author when they like them so much. You know.
No, I know, but you know, I've learned the hard way, and I've seen other writers try to do it. The quality suffers unless you're some freak of nature. I don't know how you write more than one really good book a year.
What was the hardest part of writing Last Man? I mean, what was some of the difficult? Obviously, fleshing out the characters sounds like it was a little difficult for you.
You know, I don't look at writing as, you know, I look at it as a job, and I think probably the most difficult part of that book was just staying focused and staying in the groove. And that's always the case for me. I like these characters. You know, it's interesting to me. I enjoy the research.
Do you think about every word?
Well, I think early on you do more than you do at the end. At the end, I'm telling you, I am operating at a level, I'm in a near trance-like state near the end. Because I'm working so many hours a day and so many days a week, and I just live and breathe the story that last 2 months.
So you're writing it 7 days a week?
Yeah.
Wow. That's a lot of time.
I found it's the only, you know, Daniel does it the same way. We've talked about, you know, that. I think Michael Connelly is pretty much the same as well. We kind of lock ourselves away and...
It's like you guys are all cut from the same cloth, you know? You all have the same kind of habits like that.
Well, I think that when you're going to write these stories, you know, they get pretty complicated.
You know, and you don't want it. You don't want the quality to suffer, because then you'll lose the readers.
Correct. And that's why they're two of my favorite writers, by the way. They're two guys I know that if I need to pick up a book when I'm traveling, they're bulletproof. I may have not read the most recent one, but, you know, like I picked up Daniel's a couple of weeks ago, and I read the first, you know, chapter. I sent him a note. I said, this is some of the best writing I've ever read.
Wow.
I mean, he is, Daniel Silva is almost poetic at times. That's how good his writing is.
Do you think he realizes that? I wonder if he realizes that. I mean,
I don't know if he realizes it, but I've told him before. I've said, you know, Daniel, to take this the right way, you know, I might sell more books than you, but I'm a blue collar writer. I'm a meat and potatoes guy. I'm out there swinging a sledgehammer. You are an artist.
Is it my imagination, or is Mitch Rapp getting angrier with every book?
You are very observant.
I mean, and this, he's very angry in this book. I mean, and
it really happened when his wife was murdered. That was what set him off. And in the next book, I'm going to try to temper it just a little bit. I'm going to try to show a slightly more humorous side to Rapp.
Oh, really?
You know, the problem with Rapp is, you know, he's a guy who just, he's been around the block. He knows what's happening, and he does not suffer fools. So people that get his way and people that don't, you know, want to get on board with his plan, then they better get the hell out of his way.
Because I've met you. You're a very easygoing guy. You're nothing like Mitch Rapp.
I have a side of me that's rather intense.
Do you?
You know, I have four brothers and two sisters. I was raised in a big Irish Catholic family. We fought a lot. I got in a lot of fights growing up.
You know, the weird part is I have four brothers and two sisters also.
Ah, one of seven. I'm fifth. Where are you?
I'm the third. I'm third from the oldest, so.
Okay.
Isn't that weird? I didn't realize we both had six siblings.
Yeah, so I love that upbringing. But, you know, these are first-year scraps. Had my nose broken, you know, a bunch of other things. I finally, I'm 46 right now, and at 42, I knocked the last person out I hope I ever knock out in my life, and my brother, who's a cop, found out about it the next day and reamed me pretty hard. I said, the guy had it coming. He said, I don't care if he had it coming. If he found out who you are, you'd be in court right now, and he'd be trying to take everything you own.
Do you get recognized walking down the street?
Yeah, I do. It was funny. It happens more in airports than any other place, because I think you've got so many readers the readers that travel are more observant about that kind of stuff.
Right.
And in my hometown of, you know, Minneapolis, St. Paul, I get recognized. But by and large, you know, us authors, we get to live a certain amount of anonymity.
You must have trouble with your titles, because I notice a lot of times when I look on Amazon, it says Untitled Vince Flynn Novel, you know?
Well, we're always doing that. You know, until you come up with the right title, you're not going to give it away. I mean, you got to hold on to that.
Now, did Emily Bessler, did she discover you in some way?
Yep, you can say that, absolutely.
How did that exactly come about? I mean, I know your first book, you self-published your first book, didn't you?
Yeah, and then so she got in a bidding war against herself for the rights to publish that book plus one more. Term limits plus, to be named other book, which ended up being Transfer of Power.
Right. So that's how that came about.
Yeah.
What was she at the time when she discovered your work? Was she working for Simon & Schuster?
Yeah, she was an executive editor at Pocket Books back when Pocket was publishing hardcover. They had hardcover imprint and a paperback imprint.
It must have been so cool to realize you've got something really special and to show it to them and to have you become such a huge success as you've been. I mean, and be able to say, I helped discover him. You know?
Well, yeah, she's pretty good. She's a good lady. I've been very happy to have worked with her for my entire career.
Now, is your IQ over 200 also?
Oh, God, no. I don't even know.
I had to ask you that. I was curious. But I know you work for Kraft Foods. Is that true? You work for Kraft Foods?
Yeah, I work for Kraft Foods. I have no idea what my IQ is, but I highly doubt it's anywhere near 200.
It's probably like 200, 201. Yeah.
No.
But I mean,
David, I actually have to run. My daughter has a soccer game, and I got to do the next interview from the car.
Right. Well, it's been nice having you on the show. It's been nice talking about The Last Man, and everybody will be able to buy it on November 13th. I appreciate you taking the time and talking.
Hey, thank you, and thank your customers for their prayers. I appreciate that, and I wish you guys nothing but the best.
Thank you so much. This has been David's Book Talk. We'll talk to you next time.